Hi everyone, thanks for coming. So today I'm just going to be presenting some work for my first year of my PhD. You'll have to forgive me, I'm going to be quite brief and glaze over some of the methodological approaches that I took. So if you have any questions about that, I'd be happy to answer them during the question time. My work is looking at opportunities for improving nitrogen use efficiency and increasing nitrogen input use on smallholder maize systems in Manica province of Mozambique. So, you know, we're all familiar with this idea of yield potentials and actual yields and yield gaps, and there are a lot of different definitions for it. You know, you've got your, like, absolute potentials based on just really straightforward environmental limitations, CO2, light, temperature, plant genetics. You've got water-limited yields, and that varies depending on irrigation or whether it's a rain-fed system. You've got attainable yields, you know, which can be the best experimental results that you can get in an area. Farmer yields, which, you know, I say farmer yields, it could mean a lot of things, but in this case I'm referring to the best farm management for an area. And then the actual yield being the more like the average farm yields. And for the purposes of my work, I'm really interested in this gap between the best farms in an area and then the average or lower performing farms. And I use nitrogen management as a way of exploring these gaps and trying to understand their causes and potential ways to bridge them. So what do I mean by nitrogen management? Two dimensions, really. So the first one is fertilizer supply, or nitrogen resources that are available. And in this case, I'm going to be looking at fertilizer supply because I don't have a lot of information about soil nitrogen for this particular study. The other one is nitrogen use efficiency, or the ability to convert those nitrogen resources into grain production, being the agronomic interest for farmers. This can be quite complex. If you can imagine farms sitting on a nitrogen response function, you've got different farms sitting in different locations, and the two dimensions of supply and efficiency can be thought of as vertical and horizontal. The vertical, you look at the change in efficiency, that is the conversion of an amount of nitrogen resources into grain. You can intensify or bridge a gap using by moving from, you know, B to A or C to D. And you do this through better farm agronomic management, so sowing densities or weed management or possible other nutrients which are limiting the conversion of nitrogen into grain. So that can often involve changing knowledge of farmers, and it can also involve changes in input investment. For example, if you're going to address weed concerns, you might need to increase or reallocate resources for labour. Then you can move horizontally along the curve, and that is change the supply of the nitrogen or the total nitrogen resources available. And that starts to get even more complex because then you're looking at things like socioeconomic management of the farm. Where are the resources being allocated? How does that compete with household needs of, say, for cash? It varies from season to season how much nitrogen you want to put onto your land. And also it relates to your production goals. What do you actually want? Do you really want to be investing a lot into your maize field, or perhaps you're more interested in working on your cash crops? Of course, as you change your investment strategies and your resource allocations, you start to vary your exposure to risk. As you move along the curve, you tend to get a much larger variability in yield, and season-to-season variability can become more extreme. You can also reduce your risk exposure by reducing your cash investment in nitrogen. So it's a very complex system, and it often involves a lot of trade-offs. My work is in Mozambique. For those of you that don't know, it's in southern Africa on the Indian Ocean coast. And I did work in three different districts within Manica. Here's a nice, very complex image that I got from a colleague of mine of Mozambique with some rainfall data. My work is in the central western province of Manica. Just to give you an idea of the rainfall variability, this is for summer rainfall, which is the maize cropping season. Highly variable, and this is from one of my sites. Coefficient of variation is about 31%, but the average rainfall, even though it's highly variable, I come from Australia, and if you told a farmer in Australia, you know, oh, it's not the best rainfall, you know, 600 to maybe 1600 millimetres, they'd say that's pretty good. Anything above 600 millimetres in a season, we would definitely call high rainfall. So it is a high rainfall region. The prices of fertiliser can also vary quite dramatically. This is some great data, although patchy, I'll admit, but it's really nice data from Amitsa. and that they survey farmers and ask them how much they actually paid for fertiliser in the area. And you can see between August 2010 and November 2013, you get quite a large range of variability in the price paid for fertiliser as well. So the climate and the market settings are quite variable in this area. So I did some farmer questionnaires, as most PhD students like to do, and I'm going to show you some data on input use and maize yields. So firstly, input use. What we find is that about 52% of the farms interviewed, and there were 52 farms in total, 52% were using some kind of nitrogen input. That could be manure, it could be, or it could be inorganic fertilizers. Of those that did use, and there were significant differences between each site. Of those that did use an input, the rates were quite low on average, you know, 16 kilograms roughly for the two sites that did use it, and averaging across the three at about 10 kilograms a hectare. So 83% of the farms used between 0 and 20 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare, which is very, very, very low input use. Now, if we look at changing the amount of inputs that we're using, we can use the maize yield and input data to do log linear regressions, quantile regressions at different levels to try and get an idea of the change in yield depending on where your farm is performing at your particular nitrogen input rate. I won't go into the details, but again, ask me questions if you want to know more about this. But what we find from that, we can use the gradients of those log linear regressions to get an estimate of agronomic use efficiency of nitrogen fertilizer. That is the kilograms of grain for extra kilogram of nitrogen input. And you can see that for the best farms, the ones at the top here, the top 25% of farms get a very high use efficiency of their fertilizer use. As you drop down in farm performance, it goes down, which is not really too surprising. For the two sites that were using fertilizer, so you can't really estimate agronomic use efficiency if you don't have any farms in the area using inputs to base that estimation on. So these are the two sites that were using fertilizer. You can see the return on investment, the value cost ratio, that is the dollars of profit for the dollars spent, is really, really good for the high performing farms. You know, between $2 and $5 for every dollar spent on the fertilizer. That's profit, and that's net profit as well. It's after you've repaid the cost of the fertilizer. So the point being, there is a real opportunity for higher performing farms to increase their investment in fertilizer, make money, and increase their yields. Now, looking at nitrogen use efficiency itself, that is the conversion of a fixed amount of nitrogen, most of the data, as I said before, is sitting at this 0 to 20 range, and particularly at the 0 range. So if we look at that, we can see this coefficient of variation in yield at the zero level for the three different locations is pretty high, ranging from about 40 to over 75%. So very, very high yield variability. We want to know what exactly is potentially causing this yield variability. I use a crop systems model called Aptim, developed in Australia, which has been used in a lot of different areas around the world, a lot of areas of Africa as well. It's pretty well validated. And what we do is we get farmers together into a workshop, and we ask them lots and lots of questions about their management. It's just a very quick way of learning about what the farmers are doing so that we can plug that information into our model. We ask them about their soils, we ask them about their production levels, when do they plant, how do they weed, you get the picture. And then we put all that information into the model. And what I did was I simulated changes in five different factors which we thought might be contributing to the yield variability. So you've got sowing density, time of sowing, soil fertility, which is organic carbon or initial nitrogen levels, weed density, and then residue retention. What we found is that if you look at how much of the observed variability was simulated by varying a given factor, you find that sowing density or plant populations was very, very effective in simulating the variability observed. And by the way, the ranges that we used to vary each management factor were the ones we expected based on what the farmers told us or from values in the literature. We also found, surprise, surprise, that soil fertility made a big difference, and you would expect that from an African production system. And we also found that surface organic matter was seeming to have some reasonable effect on yield variability. So going a little bit closer into plant populations, we looked at plugging in different plant populations for all of the climate data that we had for the two sites that we had really good climate data, which is Marrera and Rotunda. We said, okay, what's the plant population that was the highest, most frequently the highest yielding in year to year? So we're trying to look at yield variability and best sowing rate or plant density. And we found that for Marrera, which had kind of lower yields, that was a site with less fertilizer input as well, when you're sitting at zero nitrogen input, you're looking at about 1.5 plants a square meter, which is very, very low density. In Rotunda, where there was higher fertility, you know, the rate is much higher, and it increases as you put in more nitrogen inputs. We also calculated yield penalties, so if you were to rely on this sowing rate for every single year, for the years that it wasn't the best, the highest yielding sowing rate, how much of your yield are you likely to lose? And you can see in Marrera, 0.6% yield penalty when 1.5 plants a square meter isn't the highest yielding. It's not really dramatic. It was more dramatic in Rotunda, and that was due to a drought, and a very large drought in 1 year. The point I want to make is that the local recommendation for sowing rates was 4.5 plants a square meter. Those recommendations are made in tandem with recommendations of fertilizer use, which largely aren't being followed. Now, just as a final follow-up, we went back and said, okay, well, you know, we found all this information, but we don't actually know, you know, are farmers really planting these sowing rates? Is that really making a difference? We're just assuming a lot and plugging it into a model. It doesn't really tell us everything. So this is data that I've collected last month. It's fresh, hot off the press. And I categorize farmers based on their production quantiles. So, you know, 25, 50, 75 and 100, like the gaps between those levels. And for the highest performing farms, you can see that they're using lower plant populations than the lower performing farms. And they're all using very, very high plant populations. So, and you can see their production goes up with the productivity level, which isn't a surprise, but also their profit levels. So the conclusions are that there are potentials for high returns on investment in nitrogen inputs for the better performing farms in Manica. Yield variability at no nitrogen input the yield levels can be improved with lower sowing rates, and this may require some revised extension advice for the area. And finally, the point I really want to emphasize is that stepwise intensification requires improved agronomy before you start improving input use. If you are a low-performing farm, you might need to look at things like the time of sowing or the plant populations or weed management before we start encouraging farmers to invest in fertilizers, because the returns are not necessarily going to be what they should, despite the fact that it's a nitrogen-limited environment. I'd like to acknowledge my supervisors, collaborators, funding from ACR and CSIRO. And if you have any questions, I'd be glad to take them.
We have time for one question now, and then we can move to the rest after the break. Yes?
Just comment on the tillage practices, given the last talk. What were the tillage?
Deep tillage. It's an entirely manual system. They don't even have animal traction. And 25 centimeter hand hoeing, land preparation also done by hand hoeing. It's really totally full tillage. I did explore a lot of the tillage and conservation agriculture practices in my follow-up survey, and at the moment there's really no uptake or knowledge about conservation ag aside from no burning of residues, which is a kind of an evolving practice in the area. And it's something I'll be looking at in future, particularly whether or not the adoption of herbicides can reduce labour costs and therefore be a viable management change, and therefore reduce tillage, of course.
Thanks.
Thank you.